Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
Welcome to another edition of Pop Star Talk. It's gonna be a song with new words. I'm Mary Jane Popp, along with my producer, Ken Segura-Knoll, bringing you the past stars of movies and television. But this time, it's a little bit different. We're gonna delve into the heart of song with a gal who sings it like she feels it. Hi, Ken, how you doing?
I am doing well.
Okay, you're a great musician. I know you are. So if I mention songs like Crazy Blue Eyes and 16th Avenue, would you have an idea who we're going to be visiting with on this Pop Star Talk?
Willie Nelson?
Oh, you know what? Close enough, because this gal did work with Willie Nelson. And she is, well, it's Lacey J. Dalton. Let's put it
that. I knew
anybody
that.
Who's a country fan will know who it is. But she is in the North American Country Music Hall of Fame. She goes way back when. I loved it because they called her an outlaw. And one of the things, and she'll probably say that in the interview that we did, they didn't know how to categorize her because she had so many different ways of doing things. That's a true musician, isn't it?
Oh, yes. You know, it's interesting, you know, in Nashville right now, the artists like Lacey Dalton and Willie Nelson, they're now classified as Americana.
Mm-hmm.
And country is now a whole different genre with the stars that are performing and that they're developing and working. But, you know, she did an interesting song called 16th Avenue.
Yes.
Do you know what that's about?
Yep. It's the area where all the songwriters and singers and musicians, et cetera, would go to become recognized. And it became, if I'm not mistaken, it became the theme song for that area, didn't it?
Well, that's called Music Row in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You have all the major labels and it's on 16th Avenue. And it's a really neat place if you're a musician, because you go into buildings and there's every other room, there's songwriters writing songs and perform or practicing. But the one thing about them is that they welcome you in. You walk by and they say, "Hey, do you play? Have you written anything?" And they invite you in. So it's a very welcoming, 16th Avenue is a very welcoming place to be. I went there to the Nashville Songwriters Association is near there.
And
it's just amazing. And, you know, and unfortunately, it has not changed from the older days that she sings about.
Absolutely.
The people are still nice and welcoming and. So, but a lot of musicians are moving to from LA to Nashville. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I didn't. But I don't blame them. You know, it's a neat place. It's unique. Nashville is unique and always will be unique, don't you think?
Yeah. You have, I mean, Michael McDonald and that type of artist is now moving, have moved to Nashville. And
wow.
It's really just growing. The music scene is growing.
You bet. Now, you already mentioned Willie Nelson, but this gal, Lacey J. Dalton, she did duets with legendary artists like Willie Nelson. She collaborated with Music Hall of Famers like Glenn Campbell, George Jones. She toured with Merle Haggard and Hank Williams when it was very unusual for women to do so. They call Lacey J. Dalton a country music outlaw with songs like For the Black Sheep and my favorite, Devil by a Different Name. Listen up.
Call me whiskey, call me wine, call me cocaine or codeine, call me power, call me fire. devil by a different name, boys. Devil by a different name. Call me left wing, call me right. We are split right down the middle in this fight. Divided we fall, that rule don't change. It's just the devil by a different name, boys. Devil by a different name.
No, Ken, we said this before on Popstar Talk, that some of the things we talked about quite a few years ago, it's still happening today. It's just different names. Like she said, devil by a different name has nothing to do with the issues. It's amazing how her songs, her songs were real. It was what she felt and what was happening at the time. And she shared her heart and soul in all her songs. She was just an incredible lady.
She is an incredible lady.
Yeah. Well, it was, and all her music is what I meant. Yeah, she's still with us. And I'm going to invite her sometime to come back live so we can find out what she's doing. Well, she's, you know, would you believe that she's still on the road?
Oh, I believe it, because most musicians, it's hard to stop playing music.
You betcha. But here's what really surprised me when I talked to her, and this was a little while back. She really never wanted to be a star.
I never started singing because I wanted to be a star. That was not why. Why was to be able to communicate feelings to people, mm-hmm. and to have that feeling amplified and sent back to you. And you can see where people, and you can change people's moods. You can change their. I've had people who have had cancer, and I'll never forget. I was playing at Sacramento State Fair, and a woman came up to me at the fence, and she said, "Lacey, you know, please come talk to me. Please come talk to me."
Oh.
So I went over to the fence, and she said, "Why didn't you sing 'I'm a Survivor' tonight?" And I said, well, because I just found out that my record company, even though it was the hot pick single and most added record, my record company dropped promotion on it because they wanted to promote someone else's record to be the top a debuting record in the history of country music. So they just dropped Survivor.
Oh.
And I said, I knew if I sang it, it would make me sad. And she said, you never do that again. She said, I had cancer and I was in a coma. And my friend played that song for me every day, and it's the only reason I'm here and alive.
Oh, my God.
And you need to know it. And I thought, oh, that, how selfish of me not to be thinking that way. But I knew if I sang it, I'd just be not just depressed, but probably angry.
Yeah.
You know, and the song went on. The video for the song, which was really not the greatest video I've ever seen, actually went on to be a hit. And so the song did get heard. And I had a lot of people who came back to me and said, thank you so much. And my whole career, and I think you know this, Mary Jane, I've sung songs like I'm a Survivor and Hard Times.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of the material that I sing is to give people hope. And I almost feel like it's a calling.
It is.
And,
what
and
do you mean
so
you feel
that's
like?
Why
it
I
is.
Do it. You know, that's why I do it. Then I realize you better get a record deal or you won't be able to do it for much longer.
But you know what? You resonate with people and their lives and what goes on in their lives every single day. That's a gift. That's and that's not something you develop. You had it. That was your time. God gave it to you.
Well, thank you. And you know that I do feel that everything, the talent that God gave me and the voice that His Spirit gives me when I sing and the Spirit that comes through, it's more than me.
Oh, yeah.
It's way more than me. And when I write a song, I'm writing it down. It's coming from a bigger place. It's coming from a higher place.
Well, you've got those angels that say, okay, come on, Lacey J, get busy here.
Well, it's true, you know, and I don't always respond to the, a lot of times I'm busy when the ideas come, or if I'm especially tired, I'll get an idea for a song. And a lot of times I'll think, oh, really, do we have to do this right now? I'm so tired, you know. But they do that. And, you know, some of them you write just for the exercise of writing, but you can sure tell when I had a song come in a dream called Little Boy Blue,
oh.
And the whole song came in a dream.
No way.
Yeah, it did. And it's a song that I realized when I was finished with it, I had written a song for my son. But it's a song that was so popular, they never made it a single, but I had to make a single record of it and single CDs and single whatevers because people always want to hear that song, and I often dedicate it to our veterans and active service members.
Amazing.
It's called Little Boy Blue, and that song, I really didn't write it. I wrote it down.
No kidding.
And that's, you know, it does, it's just the best ones just come from a higher place.
It does. But like I said, it was a talent that God gave you. You were born with it. And thank God you didn't waste it. A lot of people waste their talents that are given to them.
It's not always easy. For me, it's been a real struggle because it's very hard to pigeonhole what my music is. Very hard. The record companies used to tell me, we don't know how. We, you know, you don't quite fit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've never quite fit anywhere. And so I had to embrace the fact that, okay, you're different. So embrace that, you know, be different, you know, it took me a long time to try to shed the skin of being some old country singer.
No, that,
you know,
not even
but
close.
I think I've finally done it. I noticed in that special that Ken Burns did, they didn't even mention 16th Avenue, which is kind of the anthem Nashville.
Yeah.
And I thought, all right, you've walked away from that skin. You didn't mean to walk that far away from it, but you meant to include it. I think I've probably step so far. I call my music extraterrestrial.
It is, but it's more than that. It's heart and soul, and that's what you're all about. I mean, you reach people through their hearts, through their souls, and you know, I would say soul music, but the people get the wrong idea about soul music.
Mm-hmm.
But yours is heart and soul, and it always has been that way, and always will be. I mean, that's who you were made to be. That's what you were supposed to do on this planet.
You know, I so appreciate you saying that. It has not been an easy journey for me. I've had to carve this career out of a granite mountain with a teaspoon.
Oh, bless you.
It has always been, and my first producer, who was the great Billy Sherrill, who discovered Tammy Wynette and George Jones and Tanya Tucker and Charlie Rich and David, he was David Allen Coe's producer and Johnny Paycheck's producer, and he was Ray Charles' producer almost to the end of his life.
Wow.
And he told me in the meeting, he said, you will not have an easy time.
Aww.
He said, and I'm going to tell you why. And he said, you have a calling, and you have a mission, and you're not just going to sing any old song.
Oh, good for you.
And he said, I just want you to know that it won't be easy for you. And I'm glad he said that to me.
Because it prepared you a little bit. Huh?
Well, he knew me. He said, you are the most difficult artist I've ever had to find songs for because you cannot tolerate a bad lyric.
Yeah.
And you want to say things that lift people, but you're not a gospel singer.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Not that kind of gospel.
Can't be pigeonholed. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he was so good to me. Oh, he was the most wonderful producer you could ever imagine.
Wow. How long was he with you?
He was with me until the record company decided that they wanted to send somebody else down to take over the record. My producer and his partner, Al Gallico, had the largest publishing company in the world, and they signed writer-artists to that publishing company, mm-hmm. like Tammy Wynette and George Jones and David Allen Coe and, you know, everybody who wrote would also sign with the publishing company, Algae, that they had. And they were making so much money from that publishing company that CBS New York became jealous of it and surreptitiously sent down a guy who I thought was the mailman. I thought he was the mail guy. I mean, I didn't even know who he was.
Uh-huh.
They sent him down to take over without Billy Sherrill being aware of it. They wanted to keep Billy making, because Billy was making records for $40,000 or $50,000 that were competing with other record companies' $250,000 budgets. So he, for many years, 30 or 40 years, he kept that part of CBS Records in the black. Huh. They didn't want to lose him, but they wanted to steal away all his writer artists and put them with their producers, with their publishing. And so they were going behind, I never forget, they offered David Allan Coe $20,000 in a video for his new movie, and he actually threatened to kill the guy.
Are you serious?
It was really fun. And everybody hated this guy. Merle Haggard called this guy the stupidest man in country music. He said, "You're the stupidest man in country music. You have... you're the guy who threw Johnny Cash off of the record company that he made." He said, "You're the stupidest." We all hated him. Oh. But anyway, that's kind of what happened with Billy. So I got kind of, it was a mess and a
not
long story
choice.
And nobody wants to hear it. But I then had to leave Billy because he wasn't going to produce for a while.
Oh.
They couldn't make him produce, but they wouldn't let him out of his deal.
Jeez. Is he still with us, or has he passed?
No, he's passed now, probably 4, 5, 6 years, but I had to have a wonderful talk with him before he died.
Oh, good.
And I got to tell him when he was sick, and I said, "Billy, I just want you to know that you said a couple of things that have kept me going through all this, resistance," because there's always been resistance.
Sure.
And I remember he told me, he said, "I don't care." He said, "I signed you because I like your voice."
Mm.
But he said, that's not the reason. The real reason I signed you is because you can write. And he said, "And don't you ever let anybody tell you that you can't write." Because they're going to try. And that kept me going, and I got to tell him that. And I got to tell him how grateful I was for his... When I first went there, he was very insecure, and he believed in me more than I believed in myself.
Bless his
And he
heart.
Taught me to believe in myself.
He
was a wonderful, wonderful person, and his partner, Al Gallico, who ran the publishing company, was also a wonderful man, and they took very, very good care of me.
There are good people in this world who really will share honesty from the heart about, what they think about you and giving you honest opinions. But you know what? There's a whole lot of others that I wouldn't give a plug nickel for. There's no
way. It has become, and I think it's becoming more and more unimportant for people to tell the truth.
Yeah.
People will tell a lie long enough that you believe it.
Yep, they believe it.
And they believe it. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm watching this in our world politics, and I think about the kind of leaders who we have in the world, the Kim Jong-uns and the Pooty Poots, all these dreadful people who are running the planet, and I think, okay, what is that about?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that attracts people to these terrible, monstrous, power-hungry dictators? What is it that people like about that? If you shoot someone in the face or you poison your brother-in-law in an airport, it's probably a pretty good indication that you are not going to care about too much else.
No kidding. But you know what? Social media has had a hand in this because they can say almost anything they want. Well, not almost. They can say anything that they want. It doesn't have to be true anymore. I mean,
look at the Facebook thing.
That's it. I've been on the air for over 40 years, 44 years now. And the thing is, I can't say some of these things. I have to have proof of what I'm saying. But on the Facebook and Twitter and all that, you don't have to. You can say anything.
You can publish a lie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you can promote a lie with lots and lots and lots of money.
You betcha.
And, it really seems at this point that the golden rule, which is he who has the gold rules,
mm-hmm.
is kind of what's, and maybe always has been, what has run the world. That and just being vicious enough to be powerful. I suppose the great Khan was probably not the most, although an interesting person. That man. But, had a tremendous, allowed people to have their own religions in their own areas and was very progressive in a lot of ways, but absolutely ruthless in others.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just wonder what it is that people do not believe in spirit. People have, a lot of people have just thrown the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, religions have become divisive. You know, I had made a statement the other day to a Nashville paper. It was during Gay Pride. They asked me for a statement, and I said, I'm going to tell you a statement. I'm going to say that Christ said, love your neighbor, and love God with all your heart, mind, and spirit. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the whole of the law. That is what I came to teach. And I said, I don't remember hearing anything about black or white or gay or straight or trans.
Or my God is better than your God.
Yeah. I mean, no, love God with all your heart, mind, and spirit. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's the whole. That's it. That's the whole of it. And P.S., that is what I came to teach. Amen.
It just makes me crazy when I see the hate out there. It's not only divisive, it's not only I have a different opinion than you, it's hate, pure hate. And, you know, the more hate we have, we're destroying ourselves with that hate.
I never thought that I would see our country so
divided,
close to a civil war.
Yep.
In my lifetime.
Yep.
I never, ever thought that that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in our democracy.
Of course.
And I believe that those checks and balances that we always had that seem to be being destroyed right and left.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Those were really good things. The founders were pretty conscious people.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew the nature of people. You know, unfortunately, it is our nature to crave power and to crave glory and to crave money.
Yep.
It's, you know, and that's a wonderful thing in some ways. I mean, it's wonderful to be, you know, to...
to be ambitious and all that. That's
yeah,
okay.
To
that's
be
cool.
Inventive and to yeah. be, you know, entrepreneurial.
But not at the expense of everyone else. So.
Well, the one thing that I have watched... I've watched some television shows, and I won't name them, but where the whole point of the show is you step on anybody's feet, hands, or head, but you win.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how you play the game.
Yep.
That's wrong.
Sure it is.
It's human nature, but it is our lower nature.
Mm-hmm.
We were born to have a higher nature, and that higher nature speaks to us all the time.
Do we listen, though?
Well, no, we're not listening. I don't think, you know, when you have, you know, the Kim Jong-uns and the Vladimir Putins and these kinds of terrible dictatorial Assad and all these ethnic cleansing idiots, you know, when are we ever going to realize? You know what I really hope? Here's what I really hope.
Okay.
I hope that in our lifetime, an alien presence makes itself
known,
alive and real on this planet. And I hope that they're green or purple and spotted and maybe have two heads. Now deal with it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that? And what if they come as, oh, we've been coming here for thousands of years. You know, you guys have been denying it, but we're here. We've been around. We're watching you. We're watching you grow. We don't want to interfere. But we just want you to know we're here, green, purple spotted, with long, giant feelers. And what are you going to do with this? What are you going to do with that? Where are you going to take that? I can't wait.
I love her. She just she is so open to any possibilities. And that's what I love about Lacey J. She was actually born, her name was Jill Byram. She was born in Pennsylvania. It was a mining country, mining area. And her dad played guitar, mandolin, and banjo. Both parents enjoyed singing country songs, so she was exposed to that. It had a big influence on her life. And she actually recalled an interview with Time magazine, and she said, I love the songs more than the singing. And it was the words. It was the story that she was telling. And she's still telling them today. She actually studied art, but music kind of drew her back into the songs and playing a guitar and writing. Amazing lady, don't you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed you know, what she had to say. And, you know, she's a very, very talented singer, songwriter, and she has such a unique voice. She's she's very much country.
Yeah.
Quite Western, but she is definitely country.
Absolutely. Well, she has something else that she has always had a passion for, and that's trying to save the wild horses that made the West what it was and always will be. You know, with the cowboys and those wild Mustangs. And my very first interview, which was quite a few years ago, Lacey and I talked about trying to save those horses. So I asked her if there have been any gains in that goal.
I don't believe so. In fact, I think the situation is probably worse maybe than it's ever been.
No.
There have been some efforts. The Bureau of Land Management, which has always been a very problematical organization to deal with for horse advocates and people who like the horses, they are, by the Government Accountability Office, the most mismanaged agency in the United States government. I got to say, that's saying something. And they can be very difficult. There are a lot of great people at the Bureau of Land Management, and they really want to do the right thing, but it's a bureaucratic mess, morass. And there are a lot of people who believe that horses are not native to America, and that's what you will hear from biologists and folks like that all the time. But I know that in my museum in Virginia City and in the Nevada State Museum, there is a photograph of the bones of the modern-day horse from the Great Basin. And some scientists believe that the Great Basin was actually the cradle of civilization for the horse, and that they went over the land bridge to Asia and Europe that way.
Really?
So it's a controversy, and a lot of there's been a lot of fighting about it and so on. But many well-educated people still believe that the horse isn't native. What I say to them is, well, they're not native. They should be eradicated. I said, you know what's not native to the United States?
Us.
Yes. You know what's not native? White people and cows.
Yeah, us. You know, it's just...
You know, that's what's not native to the United States. I don't suggest we go out and kill people with cows. I love cows.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, if you've ever heard Cord Blund, who is a wonderful Canadian folk singer, he has a saying, may you always have cows around you. And I think that is the most wonderful thing that he says. His dad was a veterinarian, and he's a real cowboy and a horseman, and an incredible poet and songwriter. If you haven't heard Cord Blund, I suggest you go and hear him. He writes a lot of historical sorts of things, and he is just quite the wonderful thing. But may you always, all of you, always have cows around.
I love it. I love that. But, you know, if the wild horses are eradicated, that's the West. You know, this country is known for that. People come from all over the world to see it. Why can't we figure out how to handle that?
Well, I don't know why we cannot convince the powers that be. We almost had it done here in Nevada because we have more wild horses here than anybody. And about 30 years ago, we got together with a couple of the senators, and we wrote a proposal, and the BLM helped us. They were going to actually give us the land in the Pine Nut Range, which is in Nevada, sort of between, it's kind of between Carson City and Reno on the backside of Carson. And it's a huge area that has been deemed as a horse management area. And they were going to give us several thousand acres back there. Which runs along the Carson River. It borders the Carson River, is sort of the edge of it, along Highway 50. And we had it all planned. We were going to have a wild horse interpretive center, and we were going to have a native plant garden with tours and horseback rides out to interact with the horses in a non-invasive way. Jeep safaris for people who were unable to ride the horses, and walking tours for those who like to hike, and a wild horse museum, which I had already started, had for 8 years up in Virginia City, And we put it on, it was pork on a bill for Afghanistan, and righteously it got cut.
Yeah.
So after that happened, we were all pretty pretty depressed. We tried to do it another time in a place not too far from there. And we got so far as to be talking to the people who owned the land at the bottom of Six Mile Canyon, which runs down from Virginia City to Highway 50. There's a big plot of land there with a natural lake of drinking quality water. And it borders on BLM land. And we were trying to get the people who own the old mining land, which cannot be mined anymore because it's a Superfund site, and to permit us to have a horse sanctuary there. But they were all in rest homes. There were like a whole bunch of people in rest homes. And they could not see their way clear. We probably did not give a good enough argument to how that could really help their finances by being a long-term sort of a tax write-off thing for a conservancy. And we even had a conservancy involved, and that didn't quite happen. So I haven't given up. I think I'll probably give it one more try.
Yeah.
Because I learned recently that the San Diego Wild Animal Park gets 4.5 million visitors a year.
See? And all over the world they would come to see it.
Yes, and they do, but there's no place where they can actually reliably see them. There are places where they show up, but they're not always there.
Yeah.
Horses are migratory, especially wild horses.
Mm-hmm.
Although we've cut out so much of their migratory pathways that it's not the same as it used to be. They can't range as far as they were. But I worked very, very hard with the largest industrial park in the world, which is Tahoe Reno Industrial, for years. It took me 10 years. And I worked with the broker of that park, and oddly, the most famous madam in the world, Susan Austin, the madam of the Mustang Ranch.
Uh-huh.
And she... the Mustang Ranch happens to be on that industrial park.
Oh.
And I had read something in Atlantic Monthly years and years ago that said there are three reasons why international companies move their headquarters. And I can't remember one of the reasons, but two of the reasons that I did remember were proximity to wildlife and proximity to brothel.
Oh.
Well,
that'll do it.
We just did it. We did a sales job. You know, Susan worked really hard. Lance Gilman, who was the broker of the property, his mother had been a rodeo queen of the Pendleton Rodeo. He grew up in a rodeo family, and he had been in the music business. He was down in L.A., and we knew each other because of that. And so I was able to actually get in and talk to him. And so the three of us worked together and convinced the owners of the park, the owner of the park, that if they allowed the horses to be there and provided water for them, that because that's where the horses were in anyway, that they would have big companies come and move their headquarters there. And the first thing that happened after 10 years of, you know, just trying to convince everybody that this was a good idea since the horses were there already, the Tahoe Reno Industrial Park allowed the wild horses to be there. And they didn't make a whole lot of commitments. They just said, we're going to try this. And the first thing that was Walmart moved a huge installation onto the park.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they did was paint wild horses all over their water tank. So there's about, with the money, the park actually itself, it used to be, I think, 102,000 acres, and they sold off a lot of that. The park itself, I think, is only on 40 or more acres now. But all the businesses that came onto the park, like Tesla and blockchains and a number of others, were open, very open to having the horses there. And now they have actually kind of taken the horses under their wing, and the only thing that is not ideal about that situation is they can't have the liability of people to coming to see the horses. That would have to be through the government, because if the state or the Bureau of Land Management were to partner with advocates, I think we could get it done, and liability would not be the great problem that is for a private industry. But this, in fact, probably arguably the largest herd of wild horses on private land in the country excepting for Indian reservations, where the horses breed indiscriminately, and we have one of our advocates works with the tribe. She can't save them all. She can't save the 2-year and 3-year old mothers of these horses, but she gets a lot of the babies and is able to save them and some of the mothers.
Yeah.
But a lot of horses are still going to slaughter, and now they're mostly going down to Mexico, where it's abomination. It's just abomination. When you see the films of what happens down there, I don't know how their hearts become so hard. I don't know how you can abuse an animal repeatedly every day and find some joy in cruelty. You know, what is wrong with people?
Oh, like listen, that? You know, they got chicken fights and everything else. I don't know. There's something mentally wrong with people.
Well, we've always been this way. And, you know, one of the songs on the new album, For the Black Sheep, is a song that calls everybody, that says everybody loves to hate.
Mm-hmm.
And the verse goes, everybody loves to hate. Everybody loves to hate. You know we should change, but it might be too late because everybody loves to hate.
That's true.
Everybody wants to be right. Nobody wants to be wrong. We've been around here for thousands of years, and we've never learned to get along.
Mm.
And one of the bridges of the song says, but up at Galactic Central, they're shaking their little green heads. After all that they've seen, if they don't intervene, these human things will wind up dead because everybody loves to fight. And it's really true. When I write these things, I'm not just writing them out into the world. I'm looking at my own spirit and saying, you know, there's a part of you that does this too. So, you know, how do we change that? How do we grow beyond that? And we need to, Mary Jane, because if we don't do it, we are about to lose our happy home here, our nest, and P.S., we don't have another one.
Boy, very good words for us to think about, Ken. She's so, and this lady doesn't hold back.
Absolutely.
I have two little things to tell you. One is she mentioned the Mustang Ranch. Many, many years ago, I had the owners of the Mustang Ranch on my pop-off show. They were delightful. We had more of them. We just had a ball talking.
I actually shot a documentary for the Playboy Channel at the Mustang Ranch.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. Very popular.
But I do have a wild horse story.
Oh, okay, cool.
You visit our house in the mountains. Across the street, there were wild horses. And when we first moved there, in the morning, my wife would go to work. And then later on in the day, I'd drive and I'd see these wild horses. And my wife would come home and I said, did you see the wild horses? And she said, those aren't wild horses. Those are cows. And I'm thinking, she was a champion rider jumper, you know. Uh-huh. And I said, she knows what a horse is. So this went on for like weeks. And that was, so one day she had her day off and we were going to go have a late breakfast and we left. And there were the wild horses. And she says, oh, my God, look at the wild horses. I said, yeah, they're not cows. She says, I knew that. So I had to investigate. You know, there had to be more to this story. So I went early, and sure enough, there were cows there. And what was happening is they would feed the cows there. And when the cows would leave to go down to the river, the horses would come up to eat what was ever left over.
Oh, so you were actually seeing horses and she thought they were the cows.
No, she was seeing cows. I was seeing horses.
That's amazing. Oh, one little quick thing. This is a little secret. Nobody knows about it yet. With Lacey J, she actually sent a letter to President Trump. And she just gave me a couple of the things that she was going to be talking about in that letter, that why can't he start a Western Mar-a-Lago on one of these areas that she was talking about and have a resort. They can have all these things that she was talking about with riding horses and, you know, making and maybe even with the Native Americans and all that. And she hasn't heard back yet as of now.
I would tell her, talk to Ted Turner.
Well, that's a good idea.
Ted Turner is the largest landowner in New Mexico.
Ooh.
He is also the largest owner of wild horses.
Ah, okay.
Bill Richardson had the horses that were on, you know, the Sandale Mountains and stuff, or that area. He gave them to Ted Turner. They gathered Ted Turner's land and let them go. So Ted Turner, it would be a better than, you know.
The president?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Of course, because Ted Turner was married to Jane Fonda.
Uh-huh.
Jane Fonda also has a property in New Mexico where they have wild horses.
No kidding. Okay. Well, I just think the idea is great. People from all over the world would come because they always, like I said, they always think about the West with cowboys and wild horses and that type of thing, don't you think?
Yeah, I have pictures I'll have to show you.
Yeah, please.
The males are pretty beat up.
Yeah.
Because they fight for the females. And I actually witnessed two male horses, studs, fighting over some females. But I got to witness there was baby colts and everything. And then one day they were gone because the governor had them moved.
Oh, geez. Okay.
New Mexico has a lot of wild horses.
Well, all I can say is, I love talking to this lady, and I'm going to invite her back. I'm going to keep track and see if she hears anything, and I'll pass the information on to her about Ted Turner. And, she's a celebrity. She should be able to at least get the ear of some of these people and the possibilities, because it would pay for itself. I mean, anything that's wild and that they can see and be a part of has been always very successful. Like she says, there's an animal place down in Southern California. 4.5 million people a year come there. That ain't bad. They charge, obviously, and I think it'd be a great idea.
Well, we could build a giant RV resort.
There you go.
Around the horses.
Oh, there you go.
Horse concept.
It's always unbelievable. I just loved Lacey J. Dalton simply because she just has a heart. And she really, she doesn't hold back. She tells it like it is, and it comes from her heart and soul, just like her music does. Mm-hmm. So, Ken, I hope you enjoyed it, right? So, there you go. I guess I'm kind of catching a little of that Lacey J. Dalton country charm. She's such a special person with a very big heart. So till next time, I'm Mary Jane Pomp with Ken and our engineer Greg, hoping that you enjoyed meeting this incredible lady. And just you wait till our next time together on Pop Star Talk. But please don't forget, tell your friends and family about Pop Star Talk so they can be a part of our family too. So till next time, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and always dare to dream. And I want to leave you with this thought from Lacey J. Dalton herself.
Life's not now, it's all I can trust. Tomorrow's a daydream, yesterday's dust. Life's about now, it's all that I've got. Got to strike while the iron is hot. And yo, everybody thinks I'm crazy. Yo, I don't really know, but baby, I believe in this wicked sweet love somehow. Anyway, we're happy, and anyway, life's about.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.